topic. Applying to the science of Jewel as I drop it. So-called companion standing as your best friend. Do a 180 and stabbed in a back end. Then what? You never been so upset. Yeah, just yet. Don't let it stop the props you got to get. Don't let it ground you, drown you, make you frown. Cause life's a drunk sound and you got to get down. Words of a real man, here's the game plan. Women ain't limits to be squeezed in and eased into the can. Who good for your clean? You went wings to the beach and now your fellas are catching amnesia. Beautiful dark brown skin and it's mine. If you don't like my kin, just fine. R-E-S-P-E-C-T-I need no time to fight. I got mouths to feed. You can play ball and be small as an elf. Respect from me first, respect yourself. Hey, if I roam the streets that you can't walk on, it's wrong. While a strong man talks on, I'm in command and in full demanding. Thriving off these knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. No taking a dazzle, singing and rhyming and coming correct. See, I respect and love them and they respect and love me.
Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly, and well, it is about respect. And with that said, that's an excellent segue into our program this evening. Well, let me back up one, listeners. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. My name is Daryl Clark. You are at the right place at the right time, where we bring you news and information gathered or called from around the world, typically within the United States. However, from time to time, we do stretch beyond its borders to bring you information that's pertinent to you and your loved ones' well-being. Today is truly another very, very special program. And I know I say that frequently. I'll be the first to admit it. And I only say that because it's true. Today is special in its own way with regard to our programming. We're going to do something just a tad different than what we normally do. And that is, we're going to do a book review. We're going to do a book review with a previous guest who's been somewhat of a regular with regard to Progressive News Weekly. But before we get into that, let me just say thank you for taking this time. Thank you for sharing Progressive News, for being a crusader for change, for being a change agent for our regular listeners. You know that we bring this news and information to you in order to inspire you, to encourage you, to empower you, and instill you to make a difference, to get involved, to take action. And today's program is absolutely no exception to that. And so, with that said, today's program is going to be an opportunity for you to do all of the above. To be encouraged, to be inspired, to be empowered, and to make a difference through not just words, but your action. Our guest, for those of you on our mail list, is Dr. Eddie Taylor, author, change agent. He holds a PhD as well as 2 master's degrees. He is certainly one who doesn't just talk the talk, but Dr. Taylor walks the talk. He has written books, articles, and is well respected in the area, especially of encouraging and uplifting humanity, especially those who are most disenfranchised, and in this case, the African-American community. He's done much research in this area, on this topic. And today, we're going to give all those an opportunity who have read his latest book to have some dialogue, to have some guidance as to what all of that research means. And hopefully, as has been suggested, you have had an opportunity to read the book. The title of the book is The Day the Crabs Got Out, The Revival of Black America. I've had an opportunity browse those pages from front to back, and it is certainly one that I would encourage everyone that cares about this country to take a look at. We're going to shortly go into a dialogue with Dr. Taylor. And again, whether you've had an opportunity to browse the pages or read the book in its entirety or partially, you're welcome to call in and have some dialogue with Dr. Taylor. This will not be the last time that we'll do this, as Dr. Taylor is in the process of touring and doing book signings. What we will do, and we've committed to this, is post-book signing every so often, whether it's once a month or more frequently or a little less frequently, we'll come back and we'll delve a little deeper into the book. Because, you see, this is not just a read. It's in effect, a workbook. As I mentioned, Dr. Taylor is armed with a PhD, and it happens to be in clinical psychology. He has two master's degrees, and in addition, he utilizes his practical experience and mindset to approach the myriad of societal ills affecting the Black community. And in this case, the discussion centers around an issue that has plagued the African American community for centuries. I dare say going back to slavery, and we're going to touch upon this. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome again to the Progressive News Weekly airwaves, Dr. Eddie Taylor. Dr. Taylor, welcome. Welcome back.
Taylor's out of the
room. Oh, we lost the connection. All right. Well, we'll ask Cecil to reconnect with Dr. Taylor. So, let me continue with regard to that dialogue, with regard to the body of work that Dr. Taylor has done. His work spans several decades, and it looks like we have Dr. Taylor back. Cecil, is Dr. Taylor with us? Yes. Dr. Taylor? I believe we have him. Dr. Taylor, are you with us? I'm getting a signal that you are. Well, while we're waiting to make the connection, let me let you know how you'll be able to join in this dialogue. You'll dial 347-838-9142, and then you'll press 1 on your touch-tone phone, whether it's your cell or your landline. The number again is 347-838-9142. And if you haven't already done that, you'll dial that number, and then you'll press 1. If you've already dialed that number to get in to listen, then you'll just simply press 1 in order to ask a question or pose a comment on this subject. And I'm really looking forward to this dialogue. As you know, we encourage everyone to bring your diverse perspectives and ideals and ideologies to the fore, because that's what makes us who we are. And I will promise you, as I always attempt to do at least, that I will facilitate the conversation as truthfully without any bias as much as I possibly can. And what that amounts to on occasion is our guests are challenged, but it's good because we always need to make sure that we're grounded and we need to hold one another accountable in that sense. And it just makes for progressive movement forward. So not sure if we have a bad connection with Dr. Taylor. We're going to try to reconnect because it looks like it's connected, but our audio is off. And that's what happens when you're live, folks. But you can be sure that Dr. Taylor, I spoke with him earlier this afternoon, is looking forward to this as much as I am, and I'm sure you are if you've dialed in this evening or this afternoon if you're on the West Coast, because it is still about 3:45 out there. So we're going to drop this line at this point that we have connected without the audio, and we'll redial into Dr. Taylor. A couple of announcements while we're waiting. Next week is another program you'll really want to catch when we have the infamous, iconic, and I like to call him Dr. Dick Gregory. So that will be next Thursday, the 20th of this month. Mr. Dr. Dick Gregory will be joining us. And it's been a while. In fact, it's been April. It's been a few months. And as we know, a lot has occurred in those few months. We've had a so-called suicide. We've had children, a suicide by a young woman, a young lady. We've had children knocked down and knees put in their back in Texas. There's been quite a bit that's happened since just the last 3 or 4 months with regard to police brutality and inequality. So I'm sure, not to mention our political race for president has begun, so I'm sure Mr. Gregory will have a lot to share with us when he returns to Progressive News Weekly Airwaves next week. So be sure to tell your friends, family, and colleagues about this. And we'll keep trying to get Dr. Taylor on. Dr. Taylor, are you on yet? We'll continue to attempt to make that connection for some reason. And again, Dr. Taylor is traveling, so we will be connecting through cell phone. And with that said, he could be, you know, in a tunnel, literally traveling. It brings to mind many situations over the years, but one that strikes me, and I mean this so affectionately, is one of my mentors who have passed on. I like to call him again, the doctor, Amiri Baraka. Used to get caught in that situation. So I'm going to ask you to hold for a few seconds, and then we're going to reach out to Dr. Taylor and bring him to the airwaves. Well, we're back, and I believe we have resolved the technical challenge. I believe we have Dr. Taylor on the line with us now. Dr. Taylor, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. We never give up. So welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly, Dr. Taylor. We have listeners waiting in the wings. We did have some technical challenges. I try to stay away from paranoid-type thinking, but I would be remiss if I just didn't keep it real and keep it live as I do and have been for 8 years. This must be something riveting that we're going to talk about, because I notice when we have something to the likes of what we have that's about to take place this evening, it seems like we have technical challenges with the network. But that's okay, because we never give up. And we're just glad to have you here, Dr. Taylor. We know that you've been traveling and you've been sharing your research through your book with numerous people, and it's being well received. I've taken a read of the book and totally thrilled with it. So let's just get right into it. Before you came on, I built this as something unique and different for this particular program. And correct me if I'm off base, but I said basically what we're going to do is have a book review on the air. And from time to time, we're going to revisit this because it's not a situation that we're going to grasp in a 20-minute or 30-minute session. Uh-huh. And we're also going to give a broader base an opportunity to go out and get the material. And what I really love about the material is it's a quick read, and it doesn't hurt the pocketbook. Well, who am I to judge? Because I know I've lived situations where, you know, somebody tells me, you know, $3, that doesn't hurt. Whoa, wait a minute now. I'm trying to catch a bus. You know, don't tell me. So I'm not trying to judge in that sense. But relatively speaking, what you've done is you've come up with something that's not voluminous. And typically anything under $10 doesn't, you know, put that much of a stress on the average individual. And if nothing else, it is such a quick read that a person can go in a bookstore and sit down for an hour or so and pretty much get the crux of what you're saying, and then come back and we can have some discussion, and perhaps you can clarify, because I even have my list of questions, some of the things that people may be confused over with regard to the book. So if we can, I'd like to just start with the book itself, The Day the Crabs Got Out, The Revival of Black America. You break it down into six. I'm going to say six. Of course, there are seven chapters in the book. But you start off with, and I'm doing this because everyone hasn't read the book. And I've had numerous calls, even today, from individuals saying, Daryl, I got the newsletter, but just this week, and even if I order it on Amazon, it's going to take a few days. So that's why I'm hoping that we will be able to follow through, as you and I have discussed, and do this from time to time.
Yes.
So your chapters, one, what is the barrel? Is it the barrel of a gun? You know, is it a barrel of fun? I mean, what I love the way you open up with the first chapter, what is the barrel? And this is for those who want to take notes. And by the way, I encourage that the listeners take notes. And for the next time that Dr. Taylor comes out, encourage a young person to join this dialogue, because truly there's some history that we're going to talk about here as well. The second chapter, how did African Americans get in this condition? Or in other words, how did the crabs get in the barrel? And then you talk in chapter 3 about life in the barrel. Chapter 4 is how do the crabs get out of the barrel, which is the chapter that I spent a little bit of time on. I just had to reread that a few times. And then 5, black organizations, the NAACP and the Urban League. I have a few questions on that one, Dr. Taylor. And then chapter 6, the black church, focus on its members. And like I said, there is a seventh chapter called Black Entertainers Representing Healthy Images. And that kind of speaks for itself. That one, you know, that's been a hot button of mine. So we're going to definitely discuss that. But can we start off with the simple, what is this barrel? And we've all heard the term, crabs in a barrel. And I liken it to another saying, sometimes we're our own worst enemy. But you explain it as a metaphor. And, and if I may, your description, and I'll just go verbatim, but then I'm going to ask you to elaborate a bit, is simply the barrel is a symbol.
Yes.
It's a symbol of a condition in which those about to climb out of the barrel are pulled back in by the other crabs. Let me just repeat that once more. The crabs in a barrel is a metaphor used to describe, or better yet, symbolize a condition in which those about to climb out of a barrel are pulled back in by the other crabs. So this barrel is a symbol of a condition. Is that's the way I understood it. And I'm truly, keeping it real, listeners, I'm truly, Dr. Taylor and I do talk from time to time, but he's very busy, so we don't have these long 3-hour conversations. So, Dr. Taylor, there are going to be some things that I'm going to be looking to get clarification on myself while we're on the line. But that's my understanding from this read from cover to cover, that the barrel is a condition.
Yes. Yeah, and what I wanted to do, I wanted to explain and simplify the terminology, and the things that were used to discuss and to show the condition in which we're in. So I looked at the barrel, and I referred to the barrel as a symbol. And I also mentioned that a symbol is not the same as a sign, whereas a sign can only mean one thing. You know, when you see a stop sign, the stop sign only means stop. It doesn't mean wait. It doesn't mean keep going. It means to stop. However, a symbol can mean many things. And based upon the context and based upon the presence of the symbol and based upon the condition in which you see the symbol, that will determine what the symbol is. And so when we look at the barrel as a symbol, that symbol, that barrel symbol, can be the type of education in which we have. It can be our environment, it can be our economic condition, but ultimately it's a type of mental condition that exists within the Black community.
Okay. So you go on to break that condition down, as I understood it, into three areas. You say that the barrel is used to symbolize multiple conditions, not just one condition, but multiple conditions. And you break it down, from what I saw, into three main areas, which, as I read further, those break down into further subsets, which in some cases you consider distractions, not to be confused with the distraction itself. And that's where I want to delve into. And Dr. Taylor, this is going to take some time, I believe, because just understanding that difference between the condition and the distraction, I think maybe something we need to peel back some for the benefit of our listeners. Because I'm getting feedback. I sent this newsletter out early part of the week, and I've gotten several responses, and that tells me that you've jarred the conscience of some folks.
Okay, good. Good.
That's not usual. It really isn't. From time to time, I will get that kind of a response, but I have gotten that now. So one of the areas, when you talk about these three general categories of conditions, one you say is the educational system that African Americans are dealing with. First of all, the crabs. We are talking African Americans, right?
Yes.
Within the barrel. Okay, so let me back up. I've gotten a little bit ahead of myself here. The crabs in this case, and it's not. I don't think you're saying that it only exists in the African American community. It's just that we're speaking specifically of the African American community in this metaphoric example.
Right, absolutely.
Correct?
And then research of the crabs in the barrel, and some would call it the crabs in the bucket, indicates that this is something that is used cross-culturally. So many cultures have this same idea and concept. They use the same metaphor within their own ethnic group, their own community, their own organization. And so it's not a black thing. It's not an African-American thing. Although within our community, we think it is, because we're within it and we see it happening. We see it live. We have the lived experience or the phenomenological existence of it. However, this is something that exists in other communities and other cultures and even other nations. They have the same idea and use the same concept and the same phrase regarding the crabs in the barrel, the crabs in the bucket. But this, you know, and what I look at, the reason why why I included the subtitle, The Revival of Black America, is so individuals understand that the day the crabs got out was making reference to the condition of Black America, because our condition is like no other condition in this world.
How is that, Dr. Taylor? Let me stop for a moment. Our condition is like no other condition in this world.
Yes, when you look at African Americans, Black America, look at how we arrived in this, you know, on this continent or in this country. Our arrival in this country was ultimately to defeat us, to destroy us, and to remake us for the benefit of another people, so that we could not think for ourselves, be ourselves, and have any type of self-determination. So our existence here was for us to have no purpose, value, or anything of our own. However, what we have done, regardless of how some of us have been lynched, our ancestors have been tortured, brutalized, raped, molested, mistreated, hated, despised, and dehumanized. We have, although they took our language, they took our culture, took our history, took everything from us and left us half dead, almost like the man that was on the Jericho Road that the Samaritan had to go by and help. That's how we were. We were left half dead. However, we somehow were able to pick ourselves up. We were able to learn the language. We were able to develop a history, develop a culture, develop an identity. And in spite of the fact that this country hated us, abused us, mistreated us, and left us for dead, we rose up like the phoenix or the bantu bird. We rose up to live a renewed life. And then we have forgiven and continue to forgive those that have despised us and those who continue to despise and reject us. We continue to show love. We don't have any ill regard, any hatred. There's nothing in us that makes us hate those who represent the oppressors and those who were out to destroy us completely. So we are very loving people. We're very forgiving people. We're very kind people. And at the same time, we have learned to educate ourselves in the midst of a country and a system that never wanted us to have an education to learn how to read or to write. And so we've done something that no one else has been able to do. In this country where the Africans were brought here to be slaves, we are still identified ultimately as hyphenated people. So here we're African Americans. The Africans who were sent to Britain, they're British. They're not Britain Americans. The Africans that were sent to Cuba, they're Cuban. They're not Cuban Africans. However, in America, this is a very unique place. And what we have been able to do makes us a very unique people. And in order for the country to thrive, in order for even, I would even say, for humanity to thrive, I think they can learn a lesson from black people in this country and how to love, how to forgive, and how to develop something out of nothing, because of all that we've been through and where we stand and how we are able to exist today.
Wow. And you actually break that down in your book. I mean, we're still in the first chapter. That's why I say, Dr. Taylor, I'm not going to repeat myself too much on this, but I am so grateful for what you've done. There are folks, for the most part, I believe, and I could be wrong, that really have no clue what we're about to open up here. They have no idea, even those who have read the book. And I've had those who have not read the book to have made hypotheses about where you might be coming from just based on the title, that
okay.
maybe you're blaming the victim. But let me back up a bit here and go into what you just said about, although there are other cultures that
uh-huh.
have used the metaphor of the barrel to describe a situation that they have gone through, no other culture or race has specifically been in the situation that we have been in. And I almost questioned you on that before you broke it down toward the end.
Uh-huh.
For example, we're hyphenated to this day. Because
right.
I was going to say, well, you're not the first people on the planet to be slaves. But you
right.
broke it down
uh-huh.
historically.
Yeah.
And with regard to the barrel being used by other cultures and races and ideologies, in your book, in the very first page or two, you break it down by saying, you know, something of the fact that the symbol of the barrel holds a message of impossibility of an exit. I mean, if you think
uh-huh.
about a barrel, it's designed to hold something in, hold perishable or valuable goods within.
Uh-huh.
And when those goods get exposed to the outside, then they lose their value. So from the
right.
perspective of the oppressor, and when we talk about them, I love this because I don't like using words like them. We're talking about basically those who are in control, those who enacted the enslavement. And as we get
uh-huh.
further in, you actually break that down as to where that originated from, talking about Britain and how it actually started. But you break
right.
down that whole concept of the barrel to talk about the fact that the purpose of the barrel is to preserve its contents and keep the contents contained and absent of the external things, or you call them
yeah.
impurity.
Uh-huh.
You want to break down a little bit about the characteristic of the barrel and why it's a great metaphor in this case?
Yes, some of the things that you had mentioned out from the book is that the barrel is to contain and to preserve what was put in the barrel. And so as they conditioned us to have this type of mentality, that barrel metaphor, they wanted to make sure that things outside of the barrel does not somehow impede and contaminate the barrel. And that contamination, understanding the negative use of the term, and how we look at who's in the barrel. And so the negative aspect is negative only for those who benefit from the content of the barrel. So therefore, they did not want a Malcolm X type because that would contaminate the barrel. They did not want a Marcus Garvey type because that would contaminate the barrel. Anyone that would bring any type of intellectual awareness of the ability of the African people was something that would contaminate what they had already, what they had produced and what they had developed. They produced a type of people that basically existed to be servants, existed to be obedient to the master, existed to have no other purpose other than to be subservient and other than to serve without any type of identity purpose of their own. The contaminants would be those who would come in and say that you are a self-efficient people. You are a people that are, you're a resilient people. You're a mighty people. As Marcus Garvey says, you are a mighty race. And for someone to tell us who we are and to give us an identity and a purpose and a connection to something greater than a plantation was something that would disturb the barrel and the contents. And so those are things that are considered contaminants. Education, learning how to read, those were considered contaminants. Giving individuals hope and an idea to dream and to have a destiny, those are considered contaminants. And what they would usually do is somehow just get rid of them. however they could. They would get rid of the contaminants to make sure that the barrel maintained its status, that those who were in the barrel always maintained that type of mindset, always maintained that type of mental conditioning. Whereas if someone would come into the barrel and would somehow educate the barrel and give those in the barrel some type of direction and hope and a way to escape and to renew their minds, that individual would be considered as an enemy. That individual would be someone who need, you know, who would need to his mouth to be shut. It would be someone who individuals would make sure that they did not associate with. So these are some things that we have. Even, you know, it existed in the 1500s, 1600s, and it even exists today. And so it's very difficult for those who are, and you may ask this question again, you brought it up before, those who are outside of the barrel, when we return to help those that are in the barrel, to help them out of the barrel, there's usually criticism and condemnation for those who want to bring those out of the barrel and because of the unconscious fear of what may happen. And then that mental conditioning that you that the people who are trying to help you are your enemies, and if they have anything good to say, you want to condemn it, challenge it, and not buy into it. Although it provides hope, it provides reassurance, and it provides an avenue for individuals to be self-reliant. And so these are things that happen within the barrel, and these are some of the things that, this is how they look at the contaminants. So if you have someone who comes into the community and they help the community to understand, in essence, we need to have our own stores, our own corner stores, our own grocery stores, our own gas stations in our community. So these individuals who come up with these ideas will be attacked. They'll be attacked by many different areas, many different angles, because they're coming into a barrel mentality, trying to help individuals to remove that mentality. And if that's all that they know, then they don't want to hear, in essence, nothing else that will somehow bring them a different type of understanding of who they are and how they exist.
Let me go back just a bit. As I said, I want to peel this one back slowly, so that the listeners can understand, and if you're willing to continue this series for the next 3 months, I will. I really in my heart believe that you're onto something here. Back towards the beginning of what is the barrel, because like math, if you don't get 1 + 1, multiplication is going to be very difficult. If you don't get 28 + 52, multiplication is going to be difficult. If you don't get multiplication, algebra is going to be tough. It's building. It's like light. So I want to come back to that understanding of really what is this barrel? Because, again, when I hear questions like, well, what is this about? This sounds like somebody's blaming somebody who really can't help themselves.
Right.
Let's break this down a little bit. You say these conditions can be classified, and sake maybe of simplicity, and that's one of my first questions is it for the sake of simplicity that you classify these three areas, and I'm going to mention them before you answer it, or is it because these are just the three main areas? And the three areas that I'm talking about, you say these three conditions, because the barrel symbolizes multiple conditions, not just one, which might be fear. It symbolizes multiple conditions.
Right.
And you say that those conditions are economic, education, and environment.
Yeah.
And you give the example, when the barrel's content is a poor educational system, the function of the barrel is to keep people ignorant and without education.
Yes.
If the content of this barrel were to become real education, the non-working educational system would perish.
Yes.
And it only makes sense. I mean, that's just common sense. If indeed this condition is poor education,
Uh-huh.
Remember, this is the content of the barrel, poor education. And we're supposed to be in, remember, we're the crabs in that condition or in the barrel.
Uh-huh.
As long as we're in that, those owners or keepers of the barrel are satisfied. Because the goal is to keep that treasure, that value, that would be us, in the barrel.
Uh-huh. Right.
So as long as in this, in the one example, education, this poor educational system, the powers that be are happy. But,
uh-huh.
but if the content of this barrel were to become real education or productive education,
uh-huh.
well, then the non-working educational system would perish. You can't have both, in other words, in the same environment.
Right, absolutely.
You can't use environment. You can't have both as the same condition. You can't have a poor educational system and an excellent educational system as one.
Uh-huh.
That's what I'm understanding.
Right, absolutely.
So
yeah.
with that said, educational is one of the main things. And the other was, as I said, economic,
uh-huh.
and that's obvious. In other words, poor wages, suppressed income, unemployment skyrocketing.
Uh-huh.
Then the third area or condition you say is the environment. And when you say
right.
environment for the listeners, and you know, I know you're going to correct me if I'm off beat, but you're not talking about clean air. You're talking about dirty, filthy streets. You're talking about
uh-huh.
drug and, well, you explain what is the environment.
I
got a little bit lost on that one.
Yeah, so that's like where I'm referring to the streets, the environment in which we live, our physical communities, where our, you know, where our homes are located, where our, you know, our community stores are, you know, located. The streets we walk down, the streets that we walk down or drive down when we're on our way home, these streets and the houses and the empty lots, the environment that we find ourselves in somehow have a way of maintaining a type of mental condition. The social psychologists look at this, and when you go into, you know, if you ever go to a mall, and at the mall there's a parking lot. In the parking lot, there are certain there's a certain presence of the parking lot. Usually the parking lot is clean. If the parking lot is clean and you throw something on the ground or something falls out of your car on the ground, the presence of the cleanliness of the parking lot will cause you to think about what you just done. Whether, you know, you just, you know, trash is now in the parking lot and that trash came from you. If it's a clean parking lot, you usually, most individuals, about 80%, 85% individuals, if they litter in the clean parking lot, they will be conscious of that. And they will then pick up whatever it was that they have caused them to litter in that parking lot and put it in a trash can, the proper receptacle. However, when you look at a parking lot where it's filthy and there's trash and it appears to have not been kept well, you see grass and weeds growing up in the cracks and crevices of the parking lot, that will cause you to have a different type of mindset of what you have and where you are, which would then cause you to react a certain way.
Hmm. And so that's an example of the environment being a condition
yes.
that is without contaminants. Well, in the example
right.
that you
yes.
gave, a contaminated environment, because it's one that is clean and pristine, that would be considered a contamination to the environment within the barrel that the owner has created.
Yeah. Yeah, and the contaminant would be, and in most black communities, if, you know, those communities that all the services have left the community, you know, there's no one there to come in and make sure that the infrastructure is maintained. However, there's usually a few houses there, a few individuals. They are pioneers in the community, the sages in the community, you know, the wise individuals who maintain their property. They keep their grass cut, their you know, if they have bushes or hedges, they keep them trimmed. They keep everything kept up in their community. Now, these are contaminants. because these are individuals who are showing those who have the bear mentality that we can live a better way. We can take care of what we have. We can have a better looking community. It is not necessary for us to go into some other neighborhood to have a nice community. We can have a nice community right here where we are. These individuals are contaminants because they're contaminating the mental conditioning that has been placed in some of our minds, that we have, it's important, or that we need to have the rant, you know, things that have been run down, things that are no good, things that have little to no value. So that's what happens in the environment piece when we look at the barrel as being a type of environment. So everyone within the environment will have to have a certain existence, will have to live a certain way and live in a certain type of, a certain degree of an unkept presence.
You talked about, I'm going to go into this, the distractions and how they're often confused with the conditions themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about that environment being that physical area. And
uh-huh.
And some folks think, you know, drugs being brought into and sold in the community is the issue in itself. But you say that as an example of a distraction. It's not the condition.
Right.
Why would that not be the condition as opposed to it, as you're saying it, to be a, like you say, for example, gun violence,
mm-hmm.
gun law,
right.
harsh penalties,
mm-hmm.
they're all distractions.
Right. Yeah, I look at that, and then I look at, in most cities, most major cities where there's a large percentage of African Americans, sometimes every once in a while, they will have a gun buyback or turn in your gun at some location. And what they would do, if you bring your gun, they will give you a gift card. What they were doing in Chicago, they were giving gift cards to Walmart. If it was a small gun, it was a $50 gift card. If it was a large gun or some type of automatic weapon or a rifle, they would give a $100 gift card. And so this, the gun law and the issues pertaining to guns and gun violence, and then also with drugs, if the issue is guns, then that's one thing. But we have to understand what these guns are used for. And one thing I did in my book, I quoted from Johnny Cash, in Johnny Cash's song, Out Among the Stars. And Johnny Cash says that Johnny can't find a job, but he found a gun.
Yeah.
He found a gun. And so if the issue is gun violence, then just deal with the guns. But understand what's the meaning behind the gun violence. What are they doing with the guns? Is it because they have not been educated to understand that there are other ways to obtain necessities in life? Is it because there are no economic opportunities where they feel that the only way they can survive is to go and rob someone? And so I'm looking at this gun violence and even this, you know, the drugs and what happens in our community, all of these things, they say the war on drugs, you know, these are distractions because it's not a war on drugs, you know, that's going to help us. If we get rid of the drugs and we still have no employment, we still have no economic foundation, we're still in a mess. If we get rid of all the guns and we don't have education to help us to understand other ways and other means and other opportunities that we can survive and provide for our families, we're still in a mess. You get rid of the guns and we'll pick up rocks or take knives. The distraction is that let's fight gun violence, let's fight drugs. Those are distractions. It's not about fighting, it's about demanding opportunities for our people. That's what it's about. When we are able to do that, then we'll be able to see differences and have some other opportunities. And in the midst of all that, there are other things as well. When you look at the gun violence and you look at the drug abuse, there's also there's a mental health piece with some mental health clinics and some of the the opportunities to receive adequate mental health treatment is gone from the community. It's now in the prison. So individuals who need mental health treatment, they only get it when they're in jail or in prison, incarcerated. And so these are just distractions. You know, let's make the gun law strict. Let's make the drug law strict. Let's incarcerate them. But if you give them the treatment that they need, give our people the treatment that we need, these will not be issues that we'll be confronted with as much.
You know, it's interesting. You tie the environment up as you're talking now about the mental aspect of this. You tie the environment in with the mindset in terms of the actual condition. You say it's not about the drugs, it's not necessarily about the guns, it's not about the violence necessary, it's about the mindset when we talk about the environment. So if you say the condition is the environment, yeah, that's right, all these drugs and all these guns and prostitution and thugism and low self-esteem, well, wait a minute, those are distractions, I hear you saying. Those are not the actual condition. Those are distractions. They relate to the condition, I think I'm hearing you say, but they're not the actual condition. Is the condition with regard to the environment partially the mindset?
The condition is the mindset. The barrel mentality is a type of mental conditioning. It's a barrel mentality that causes individuals to live a certain way and to have a certain mindset and mental conditioning. Which means, so if you take someone that will have the barrel mindset or that barrel conditioning, they will go into a very nice neighborhood, and because the mindset is still based upon that barrel mentality, they will destroy that community. You know, and I've seen it for myself. I've seen individuals who were forced out of the, you know, certain parts of the city into suburbs, and the suburbs were pretty decent suburbs, but the mindset didn't change. And what people used to say is you can take people out of the ghetto, but you can't take the ghetto out of people, which was a phrase that people used to say. But it's the mindset, it's that barrel mentality. And so you'll take them from one place to another, and if the mental conditioning has not changed, if they still have the idea and in their mind they're still in the barrel, they will make that community, that place, that environment resemble the barrel in which they had just left from. And that's looking at that physical environment.
That's very interesting. I've actually experienced that at one time or another, having moved into an area which was fairly nice, with an upper class, I'd say fairly stable, middle, working class neighborhood. People mowed their lawns, took care of their grass, and they didn't have, you know, million-dollar homes, but they had nice, livable homes that were clean, and, and you could be proud to live on the street.
Right.
And I can remember an individual moving from an area that had a stereotype, albeit the truth of the matter was it was somewhat downtrodden of an area.
Right.
And it wasn't a year before I can remember seeing a toilet on the back lawn. I mean, obviously he had taken one out and put another, but it sat there for, I was saying, okay, I know he's going to, you know, have that picked up. It sat there for over a month before I had to say something. And then it got to a point where there were other things, like the lawnmower would be left out. Typically, you cover it or put it in the garage. And it just started to late. And it was as though he was starting to morph into where he had come from.
Right.
That comes to mind when I hear what you say that. So that's what he was used to, apparently. And he was a nice guy. He wasn't like a thug or, I mean, he was a hardworking man. He was a hardworking man.
Right.
But his tolerance, it began to, he wouldn't, think about it, he had the lawnmower, but he rarely used it. The grass would be long. So I see what you're saying about the mindset.
Yeah.
We're going to come back to that later on when we start talking about, okay, so how did that happen and how do we reverse that? But now we've talked about the environment. We've talked about education.
Uh-huh.
What about that piece you call economic? I've heard you thread it in both of those two things, the education and especially in the environmental piece. But that other arm that you consider of the conditions of the barrel was economic.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on that? That seems to be the most obvious.
Yeah, the economic conditioning and mindset, when you look at within our community, and then this would more likely go directly to individuals' understanding of the crabs and the barrel. When individuals are doing well financially, these are individuals who will be pulled down because it is the mindset of those in the barrel feel as if those who have economic success, financial success, somehow they are either Uncle Tom's, they're traitors to their race, and they need to be brought down. And sometimes you'll have individuals who will do whatever they can to discredit them, to somehow destroy their character or just destroy their career. And also within this type of mindset, the economic pain that exists in the barrel is somehow the belief that we're not supposed to have anything. And somehow the belief that the only way for us to make it, and some of those who are like deeply rooted in this, the only way for us to make it is to do it through criminal acts and criminal activity. And these are individuals who are deeply rooted in this type of barrel mentality. So it's not about getting employment. It's not about making financial gains in a way that will not lead to any type of criminal punishment. But it's a way that indicates that the only way for us to make it financially is to make it illegally, just don't get caught. And that's the type of mindset that exists within some individuals within our community. There is a belief that you have to illegally hustle in order to make it. Now, there was a time in the 60s and 70s when individuals would hustle. However, this hustle meant that you would you'd be a shade tree mechanic, you would go and you would be a carpenter outside of your factory job. You would do other things in order to earn, to make income, and to be able to provide for your family, to maintain the savings, and to actually become, some individuals became wealthy by hustling. The money that they received from their 9-to-5 job, and then they would save all the money that they made from their hustle, whether it was washing clothes, it was cutting grass, whatever it was on their hustle. But now hustle is taken on a different meaning. This hustle now is more of a criminal nature for some. And so that's when I look at the economic condition, it deals in essence with our unemployment status, the high level and high percentage of unemployment that exists within our community.
Wow. That only makes sense. You know, we've talked about these three areas now, you know, the economic, which you just so eloquently described, and the educational, and the environment. One thing I just wanted to, before moving on, to mention, I thought was interesting, is you said, with regard to education, some of those distractions, and I mentioned them, you know, overcrowded classrooms, lack of resources within the classrooms, these are distractions. The real condition is simply ignorance.
Uh-huh.
And that's profound. because once, I guess, you get past that ignorance, now you've contaminated the barrel.
Right.
Now you can start talking about, okay, how do we correct that? How is it that, how is it? And I don't know where I read this, but I thought somewhere in there you gave an example of how a school can be closed, but yet millions of dollars can be spent elsewhere.
Yes. Yeah.
We're conditioned to accept that.
Uh-huh.
And I was having a conversation earlier today, unrelated to this. I was just having a conversation with someone, and he brought up this issue of, you know, how terrible it is that our schools are closing, and our classrooms are, and our classrooms in the community don't have adequate supplies. But yet, he was saying, "Do you know how much we spend on our wars?" And he says, "I just grasped a statistic that how about," and he mentioned, and I don't know if his facts were accurate, but he was mentioning hundreds of billions of dollars have been spent on wars, have been spent on wars from our country.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right.
I don't know over what period of time, but you start thinking just 100. He had a plural on that.
Right.
Billion on wars.
Uh-huh.
And we have children that are starving. 50 million people are starving in America. So that would be when you isolate that down to the most disenfranchised, which are the African Americans, unless you consider the American Indian. But clearly, if not the one of the top 1-2 disenfranchised in this country would be African Americans.
Right.
It's hard to find an excuse for that.
Right. Yeah. And then, as you mentioned, the American Indians, they were dealt a harsh blow from the settlers and the people in this country. However, they have been and they are constantly being somewhat compensated for it. You know, their education, their health, the land in which they're on, somehow they're being compensated. But there's, anytime we talk about a compensation, a reparation, the statement to us is, well, that happened 400 years ago.
It's pretty bad. You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. You got into an interesting area. I'm still back, and we're still in chapter one. When you start talking about the political condition of Black America, and you say, when you consider the political condition of Black America, you're considering the political barrel.
Yes.
Now, we're going to have to close in the next 10 minutes on this, but I would be remiss if I did not bring this one up, Dr. Taylor.
Okay.
You say, when more than 90% of Black America voted and elected an African American as president, there was effective political conditioning with the barrel. Any Black who didn't vote for Democrats, and more specifically did not vote for an African American, was suspect, a sellout, and a traitor. The political conditioning of the barrel would not allow any talk against the only African-American Democratic presidential candidate and later president. In this barrel, no one is allowed to think or ask questions. Everyone is just to fall in line. Wow. That has implications there, you know.
Yes.
Comments?
Yeah, so with that, I hope that was, you know, self-explanatory, but what happens with that is that we were, you know, in the barrel, you're not allowed to think in the barrel. You're not allowed to ask questions in the barrel. You know, I don't recall any questions coming up about, well, what's going to happen with our dysfunctional school system? What's going to happen with the unemployment numbers that we have among African Americans? What are some things? Usually, in any type of major election, there's usually a promise given to the black community. Although they break the promise, never come through with the promise, but at least there is a promise.
True.
But here, there was nothing really given, nothing really stated about how this election and how this election was going to improve the condition of black people. And you weren't really supposed to ask that question. There is no question at all. This is a Democratic candidate. He's African American, and that's all you need to know. You don't need to know the agenda. You don't need to know what the promises are. You don't need to know how it's going to improve your life. You don't need to know anything about what's going to happen to you as a people. All you need to do is get in line and vote how we want you to vote.
And the results are telling.
Right.
The results are telling.
Yes. And then later on I mentioned in the book how the NAACP as well as the Urban League were in D.C. to deal with the issue of unemployment and economic opportunities for the black community with the administration that's in place. But, you know, any individuals who would rise up and challenge the mistreatment of our people would not be smiled upon at all. You know, and then with everything that has happened, you know, to us in the past maybe 7 years, you know, all the present, the elaborate and the exhibition of our people being attacked, being incarcerated, being murdered, all these things that are happening. Now, if you recall, in the 60s and then during the lynchings, during the attacks on our people, there was usually some talk in the White House about give us some help, help us out. We need some support. We need some support from the government. We need some support from the executive staff of the United States government. We need you all to do something. And, you know, you look at Selma, you know, and you have Dr. King going to talk to the president, you know, do something about these people, do something about these police, the law enforcement, do something. But these were conversations that were made at the White House.
You talk on that note.
Uh-huh.
You say if metaphorical packing of the barrel groups black people into one, you say the metaphorical packing of the barrel groups black people into one fabricated group. In other words, if
uh-huh.
all black people are lazy, late, or criminals,
uh-huh.
then non will make sure to spread the fabricated condition so that even blacks themselves believe it. Does that
yes.
not tie into the ministerial ignorance of some of the television shows and other things that portray our image to be a certain way?
Absolutely, absolutely. And shows will not, you know, they will not back this, you know, the shows as much if they didn't have these images. You know, and even some comedians, it's all about these images that black people are lazy, black people are criminals, all these statements. And the non-blacks constantly feed into that. And the non-blacks who produce these shows, who direct these shows, who write some of them, these are what they have. And they put this out there for us to consume.
You talk about how non-blacks have accepted, let me back up some. You say the owners of the barrel, I want to get to this. The owners of the barrel
uh-huh.
depend on pawns.
Uh-huh.
Non-blacks side of the barrel to enhance and maintain conditions within the barrel.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like you're stratifying those non-blacks outside the barrel into the owners and the non-owners of the barrel who are outside of the barrel. They're both non-black, but you've stratified the non-black into the owners of the barrel, who are non-black, and those who are pawns who are non-black?
So these individuals benefit. They benefit from the mental conditioning of the black community. And they benefit because when you look at blacks as being lazy, when you look at the how blacks are represented, they benefit because if you want someone that's not lazy, I'm not black. And so they're able to benefit, and then they're also able to maintain that that ideology by continuing to spread it and somehow to accentuate it, to make it something that seems real, even though it's not.
Well, we've certainly talked about the barrel itself and what it is. What I'd like to do in our next segment is talk about, you know, how did African Americans get in the condition. I wanted to expound on what that barrel was, Dr. Taylor, because from the question that I've mentioned that I have gotten, I don't think people understood. I think they do now. I don't think they understood really what the barrel is. Because when I get a question like, oh, here's another person, and I actually had an email that said this. Okay, here's an author that wants to blame the victims.
We've just described the barrel.
Described the barrel and the conditions that the barrel represents. So this isn't about some African American trying to blame a victim, because we've talked about the owners of the barrel and what they have at stake to maintain the barrel. So I don't believe we could have clarified it much better in terms of, is this a situation where we're just blaming black folks for their own plight? How would you address that?
Oh, this is, there is no blame at all, at all. The things that I mentioned are things that are facts. Though, you know, the oppressors, what they did. I'm not blaming, I'm just pointing it out. This is what was done. You know, the documents indicate that, the facts, you know, the historical documents and the facts of the written word, the written papers, indicate that this is what was done to black America. And then what we can see through our own experience are things that exist. The essence of the book, after you look at what happened, is not to say, well, who did what? It's to say, what do we need to do in order to improve our condition, in order to get out of the barrel and to leave where we are right now.
That you begin to touch upon in the third and fourth chapter. The third chapter, I thought especially, how did African Americans get in this condition? How did the crabs get in the barrel? And that's where I'd like for us to pick up in our next segment, when you talk about the fact that, hey, now, wait a minute. You know, there was a point that maybe this is where a person might perceive you're blaming the victim. But as you said, the facts remain what they are. There was a point when Africans actually did sell Africans into slavery, but they were manipulated.
Right.
They were, and that's a historical fact. I mean, you talk about the fact that was it early years of the 18th century. England's capitalists were investing energy, money, and firepower in the struggle to assume control of the traffic in African captives. And the trade was key to power and wealth beyond anything previously experienced on the back of human misery. Englishmen, merchants, entrepreneurs, industrialists, colonists, punched their way into the modern age, basically on the backs black human misery. And that's just the fact of the matter. It's just, you know, you can't get around that. And
right.
So there was a point in time when initially, as you state in the book, and I don't remember where, that there was resistance.
Uh-huh.
And at some point, the manipulation of the Europeans was such that they were able to have the African village compromised. And the slave traders had to convince the Africans that it would be beneficial to work with them and against other Africans.
Uh-huh.
I think that was very pivotal in all of it.
Right.
So what I'd like to do is I'd like to pick up on this, Dr. Taylor. I mean, we've really delved deep. And I want to recommend all those in the archives that are listening and all those who are listening live, and I know we didn't get into much of questioning. I think I wanted to try to lay a strong foundation about the actual barrow itself. But I want to encourage everyone to go out and get this quick, relatively inexpensive, short read, The Day the Crabs Got Out, The Revival of Black America. It's available in Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, and where else, Dr. Taylor?
Also at the Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, and on EddieTaylorPhD.com.
EddieTaylorPhD.com. You can also get the book. I want to thank you for taking the time and doing this review. I'm looking forward to the next time. As I said, I had more than a few people call and say, Daryl, I've got the book. I should have it any day. So the next time I'm hoping, and there were, and I have to say, there were several folks that wanted to have dialogue, and I'll take the hit, if we want to call it that, for that. And I'm hoping that when we come back, they'll even be more read, and then the dialogue will begin to germinate itself.
All right, okay.
That is the goal. That is the goal. Cecil, our engineer, wanted to express a comment. I don't know if he's still wanting to do that or not. And it looks like not. Cecil, are you there? Yeah, we're not able to connect him at this point. So, Dr. Taylor, let's talk offline about when is the next time that you'll be able to join us and we can delve a little deeper into the book and the premise behind it and ultimately what we can do to revive Black America when the crabs get out.
Yes, sir.
I want to thank Dr. Eddie Taylor, our special, special guest, critical thinker, human rights activist, educator, PhD in clinical psychology, for sharing with us his research through the book that he's most recently written, The Day the Crabs Got Out, The Revival of Black America, available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. And you know what? Let me, because I'll put this out on my next newsletter. Your website again is, Dr. Taylor?
www.eddietaylorphd.com.
No spaces. www.eddietaylorphd.com. And I'm sure there's other information on your website, in fact, so that's a good place to check out anyway, no matter what. Well, folks, keep on smiling. Understand that we really are in this together. There's no doubt. And we can get out of it together as well. And so with that said, until next week, and I mentioned we actually have the incomparable Dick Gregory on next week, so do tune in for that.
Right.
And then in weeks ahead, we'll certainly bring Dr. Taylor back at his earliest opportunity. I assure you of that. So, Dr. Taylor, I'll be reaching out, you know, within the next day to find out when that's going to be. Thank
yes,
you
sir.
Again.
Thank you for
God
the
bless.
Invitation. I appreciate it.
You're most welcome.